This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. The Ohio State Fair is back in full swing after last week's fatal accident on the Fireball ride on opening day, an accident that killed 18-year-old Tyler Jarrell and injured seven others. The fair is getting back to normal, relatively speaking. The rides are back, and this hour we'll look at the safety of amusement rides, both at state fairs, local church fairs, and at big amusement parks. Coming up in the program, we'll hear from an inspector of rides, an attorney who represents the industry. But first, let's get the latest from the Ohio State Fairgrounds. Joining us by phone with the latest is the Marketing and Public Relations Director for the Ohio Expo Center and State Fair, Alicia Schultz. Alicia, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning, Mike.
It has been obviously a very difficult week for the fair, and we appreciate you joining us today. What is the what's the status of the amusement rides at the fair?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, you're right. It's been a horribly challenging time, you know, and our hearts are just broken, and our condolences go out to all of the victims and their families and the witnesses. And, you know, this is not something anyone should ever have to experience. You know, that said, over the weekend, the midway rides did resume. So the Ohio Department of Agriculture Ride Safety really worked around the clock as soon as the accident occurred to thoroughly inspect every single ride here on grounds. And at this time, 71 of those portable rides, it's all of the portable rides, have been reinspected and reopened. And then we do have two permanent structures. Anyone here in the Columbus area is probably familiar with the fact that you'll see these year-round here at the fair, the giant slide and the Sky Glider, and those have both been inspected and reopened as well.
I understand some rides did not reopen, at least one. The Power Surge, it was apparently right next to the Fireball, remains closed. Why is that?
You know, unfortunately, I can't speak to the inspection process. The Ohio Department of Agriculture Ride Safety Division are the experts in that, so I wish I had some information I could share with you about that, Mike, but I wouldn't want to speculate on any of the inspection stuff because, unfortunately, I am not an inspector, and I'm not having to face that right now.
So they didn't say why, they didn't tell the fair officials why it was, why they weren't letting that one reopen?
No, I have not heard anything about that ride in particular. I know that there were, I think it was maybe four rides that didn't pass inspection to begin with and were not going to open as a part of the fair at all, and that those rides were removed. Mm-hmm. This is the first I've heard about the Power Surge.
Sure. We did ask the Ohio Department of Agriculture to take part in today's program, but they declined.
Okay.
Do you know any more about what happened? It's still fairly early in the investigation, I'm sure. Do you know any more about what happened?
I really don't. You know, right now our role is just really providing any support as the Ohio State Highway Patrol and the Ohio Department of Agriculture conduct the investigation. Mm-hmm. So the Ohio Highway Patrol is really taking the lead on the investigation side of things, and I have not heard any updates. I hate to do this interview and tell you I don't know a lot, but unfortunately that I don't know.
No, we understand, and we know these things take time. So I just
They do. It could be a long time.
Yes. Looking to the big picture, how does the Ohio State Fair decide what company to hire to provide the amusement rides on the midway?
Right. So, you know, we look at a number of factors when we're looking at a ride company to work with. Amusements of America has been here. This is their 25th year here at the fair. You know, we look at the types and quantity of rides and concessions and additional things they're able to provide as a part of the Midway and the Kiddyland area. And, of course, we do look at their safety record as well.
And they've 25 years, the same company's been at the State Fair.
That is correct.
Does it go out to bid? I mean, do you ever look at other companies? Do the other companies say, look, why don't you consider us? Or how does that work?
We don't currently go out to bid. We have looked at other companies in the past. Because of the sheer quantity of rides that are here, there are not a large number of companies that have that quantity of rides, but we do look at those. And right now, the Amusements of America contract goes through the 2018 Ohio State Fair, and the contract expires in 2019.
I see. Okay. Does the fair have any say in what types of rides are offered? Say, you know, this company shows up and the they set up the rides, and somebody in the at the fair, an official at the fair, says, "Whoa, that one looks a little too exciting, perhaps a little too dangerous." Do you have any say in the excitement level of the rides that are offered?
Of course, yes, we do.
Have you ever said no to a ride?
I do not know the answer to that.
But what are you basically looking for when it comes to ride? What is the balance between, of course, people come to the fair, they ride the Midway, it's not for everyone, but they ride these rides for the thrill. So there's a balance there between, you know, thrilling and too thrilling. So what do you look for?
You're right. There's a large number of rides and different levels of excitement. As you mentioned, you know, the ones that are incredibly exciting are called spectacular rides, and then there's everything to the kiddie rides. And we look to keep a balance of the more exciting rides and those that are more tame. And we have our rides divided into two different areas. There's the kiddie land area, which is the lower level rides that are more for children and families. And then there's the midway area, where there are the rides that tend to be a little more exciting. That said, those do vary greatly. You know, there's the kind of Sizzler type rides, you know, where they just spin around still at the ground level, to the Ferris wheel, to the more spectacular rides, like mm-hmm. you were speaking of.
The ones that swing you around, like the Fireball, that's sort of a pendulum and a rotating thing. So,
yeah.
What did you think of Governor Kasich's comment that if you want to ride rides at any amusement park or any fair, you have to be willing to accept a certain amount of risk?
You know, I mean, sadly, that's true. Governor Kasich is correct.
But there is a level of risk that you try to protect, I assume, that, you know, obviously this incident was, you know, tragic and very rare, we should say, extremely rare. But this is the type of accident, obviously, you try to avoid.
Correct. That's right. You know, I mean, we have, layers of things in place that we do to try to prevent occurrences such as this. And as you said, sadly, in this case, the accident still occurred, and it just truly breaks our hearts. And everyone here is incredibly torn up about it. You know, but prior to the fair, as you already know, the Ohio Department of Agriculture Ride Safety Division inspects all of the rides. And then each day there are structural inspections completed by the ride foreman and structural and operational inspections by a third-party independent ride safety consultant. And all of those things did occur in this case.
Mm-hmm. And they were all redone, I assume, after the accident.
That ride is not reopening.
No, not that ride, but other rides.
Other rides, yes, yeah. Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. So every ride went through that same pre-fair initial structural ride inspection that we normally do before the fair starts. They went through that again. And, you know, the Ohio Department of Agriculture ride inspectors were here all hours. I mean, they were working through the night as well as they could through the rain, if there was anything they could do through the rain that we had. I mean, they worked, you know, overtime around the clock to try to reinspect everything and make sure that everything was as safe as possible for our patrons here.
Okay. Alicia Schultz is the marketing and PR director for the Ohio Expo Center and State Fair. Alicia, we hope the rest of the fair goes wonderfully. We hope you have great weather and hope that the rest of the fair is just fun for everyone who wants to turn out there. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate it. We'd want to bring in now a Virginia-based amusement ride safety analyst and consultant. His name is Ken Martin. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher, Ken.
Good morning, sir. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. This ride, as we heard, was inspected at least three times before the accident last week. Obviously, something went extremely wrong. How could this happen after multiple inspections?
Well, you have to remember that when ride inspectors perform their initial opening inspection, they're relying purely on things that they can see, hear, and feel. And the type of deterioration that was demonstrated in some of the pictures that have been circulating are types of deterioration that you just can't see, hear, or listen to. It was a catastrophic failure of some of the structure. And as an inspector, when we're performing a visual inspection, it's very difficult to, you know, ascertain that. Now, we do have other types of testing that are done that are called non-destructive testing. And these tests are designed to look inside of the ride, so to speak. But unfortunately, those aren't mandated for every ride. And the ones that are mandated by the manufacturer. And the manufacturer is the person who designed and engineered the ride. So they are the best ones to determine what types of inspections should be performed.
You mentioned the picture. The Columbus Dispatch over the weekend published a picture that appears to show the section that broke. There's a jagged break. You've seen that picture?
Yes, I have.
Can you tell anything by looking at it?
Well, I can tell. I can't tell a lot, but I can tell it appears that that there was heavy rust from the inside of that piece of the ride, and that it worked its way outward. And the forces of this ride, as you've been describing, it's a very spectacular ride. I love the ride. I've ridden it before. I've actually inspected this particular ride, not this Amusements of America ride, but other rides just like it. And they're a fantastic ride. I mean, you know, they're designed to take you out to the edge safely and bring you back safely. And of course, you know, it failed in this particular case. So I can only speculate that this catastrophic failure, you know, has been going on for some time, and it was just not an overnight occurrence.
Now, obviously, you've only seen a picture. You haven't inspected the actual ride or the break point, but you say you saw heavy rust. Isn't that something, if it was there, that an inspection should catch?
If it's on the outside, yes. Or a non-destructive test, such as an X-ray or another test, an ultrasound would possibly reveal that. But, you know, that's why it's important on these steel components of these amusement rides that they are inspectable, or they are made in such a way that, you know, moisture or other particles, you know, can't get in the insides of the ride and start deteriorating. Because, you know, anybody who lives in a snow area knows how rust on an automobile starts in a little spot on the inside and works its way out. And that's exactly what I'm seeing in this picture.
We're talking with Ken Martin. He's a Virginia-based amusement ride safety analyst and consultant here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. We're talking amusement park ride safety, state fair ride safety after last week's tragic accident at the Ohio State Fair. Ken, should there be more extensive inspections of these rides that travel around from fair to fair? Should there be like X-rays every time they're set up, things like that?
Oh, gosh, I can't imagine what the cost would be for that. Oh, it would just be an unbearable cost. I mean, you know, amusement rides have been around for decades, and we've been taking people safely back and forth on their journey, if you will, for many, many years. And yes, we've had some catastrophic failures. However, you know, as the governor said, you know, there's risk in anything you do in life, particularly riding an amusement ride. I think if we were going to make an improvement, it would be in the information department, information sharing, you know, find out whether where these rides have been, where they're going, you know, have they been in environments that may be, say, heavy in moisture content. The information can save us time and possibly serve as a preventive measure at the same time, because we can know these things. We can share them from state to state. Right now, there's no formal official information sharing for any amusement ride from state to state. There's no sharing of inspection records. There's no sharing of how many times it's been inspected. And yes, while these things do have a cost involved, they could be easily put into place using the existing industry standards that we have. These industry standards are minimal guidelines that the industry adheres to for the most part all over the United States.
Who writes the standards?
Well, actually, the standards are written and published by the American Society for Testing and Materials.
Okay.
However, they have a committee. It's called the F-24 Committee, and the F-24 Committee is made up of roughly 80 to 90% members of the amusement ride industry, the engineers, the designers, the inspectors, the insurance companies.
That's my question. Are they independent enough, or do we need – I know there's no federal regulation of these rides. It's all state by state or locality by locality. Is the industry standards and the guidelines and the inspections, are they independent enough of the industry?
Perhaps not. However, I do know that to do anything more is going to cost money. And that's kind of what it boils down to. People don't want to spend more money for this or that. But I think our intelligence on these amusement rides can improve. I think it can be improved using the existing standards, using the existing process. We just need to have some meat in this standard so that there are penalties, so we can find these things out in a faster method rather than having to go into a civil lawsuit or have to subpoena documents or request documents and go through, you know, all the legal steps that you have to get information or to actually force someone to give you the information. I think there's an easier way to do it, and I would refer people to the OSHA plans for workplace safety. The data gathering is already there. It could be easily transferred into the amusement ride industry. But the problem is we have 50 states, and not all 50 states will ever agree to one program.
We're talking about amusement park ride safety, state fair amusement ride safety. Ken Martin is a safety analyst and consultant for amusement rides. Ken, we've talked about the structure of the rides, you know, the inspections of the rides, looking for defects, cracks, rust, bolts missing. What about the operation of these rides? You know, the folks who operate these rides, they're low-wage, low-paid jobs. Should there be more of an expertise on the folks who are operating, especially these ultra-thrill rides?
Agreed. The biggest part that we have in an incident on an amusement ride, we know right now, and everybody in the industry will agree with this statement, it's all human error, okay? Two types of human error. There's patron error, and then there's operator error. And that error is very difficult to eliminate, but it happens. You know, we live in such a multilingual country now where, you know, in a community we may have people speaking three or four different languages. A person who doesn't speak or is at least bilingual and two languages has a difficult time in certain parts of the country communicating. We have to make sure that, you know, this person that we hire is capable of understanding the manual or the ride data sheet, as we call it, and can communicate with the riders. It makes it very difficult when we can't communicate and carry on, you know, a casual conversation with people.
Are you confident the expertise level is sufficient now in many of these rides, especially the traveling rides, or do we need more expertise on those?
It boils down to something that has been said in the industry, you know, long ago. All you need is somebody who can stand up and push the green button to make it go and the red button to make it stop. Well, that's not true. That is not true. You need somebody who is attentive, who can watch their area of responsibility. And if that area of responsibility is pushing the green button and the red button, so be it. But, you know, the point is the ride operator has to be paying attention. The ride operator has to understand the rules of the ride, enforce the rules of the ride, and speaking of enforcing the rules of the ride, parents, do not bait your child or force your child to get on a ride. That is something that is seen almost daily in any fair of people. Oh, go on, Johnny, go on. You know, don't be scared. Well, you know, maybe Johnny is scared. You know, maybe he needs to grow up a little bit. You know, or your child's not old enough or tall enough to ride. They're 52 inches, and you're supposed to be 54 inches. Don't antagonize the situation. Let your child grow up.
All right.
So, you know, there are a lot of things that we, the people who ride the rides, can also do and improve on.
Ken Martin is a Virginia-based amusement ride safety analyst and consultant. Thank you for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
You're welcome.
When we come back, we'll talk with folks from the industry about these rides and how they've evolved over the years and what steps they take to keep them safe and keep us safe when we ride them. When All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking about the safety and risk associated with amusement park rides following last week's fatal accident at the Ohio State Fair. We just heard from a representative from the fair and an amusement park consultant and inspector from Virginia. Now joining us by phone from Cleveland is the senior vice president of McGowan Amusement Group, Drew Tewksbury. Drew, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Good morning. Glad to be on.
Also joining us by phone is civil litigation attorney and managing partner of Garrett and Jensen in California and past president of the International Amusement and Leisure Defense Association, Boyd Jensen. Boyd, welcome to All Sides.
Hi, Mike.
Drew, let's start with you, I guess. Let's compare the rides. You know, we have the fixed rides at amusement parks like Cedar Point and Kings Island here in Ohio. We have the semi-permanent rides that are located at state fairs. They're there for a few weeks. And then we have the small fairs, the church fair rides that get moved almost every week. Drew Tewksbury, are these all of these categories of rides equally safe?
Well, that's a tough question, Mike, on that one. Equally safe is a pretty broad definition of safe. I would suggest that all of them, when they are operated correctly and maintained correctly, inspected correctly, et cetera, have a very high degree of safety. When you compare full-time fixed site rides that are in the parks that you outline, like Cedar Point and Kings Island and so forth, you know, those do go through a daily maintenance and inspection process, which does ensure a high level of consistency in the safety of those attractions. The other attractions, mobile operations, whether they be the semi-permanent, meaning they're going to be set at a state fair for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a county fair for a week, 10 days, or even the church festivals, those mobile amusement rides actually have a very high level of safety associated with them. They are inspected regularly. Most of the higher end operators are going to have rides inspected at each spot, at each location that they go to. It's usually dictated by the fair board or the committee that's in charge. So as they're set up and torn down, they are inspected, and the maintenance staff that they have on those traveling shows are outstanding. So I don't think necessarily there's a comparison in safety. I think the bottom line is that when, again, operated, when maintained, and when manufactured properly, they all have a very high degree of safety.
Boyd Jensen, from the past president of the International Amusement and Leisure Defense Association, What is your take on the level of inspections that are out there? We keep hearing stories that, you know, we have 8 to 10 inspectors for the entire state of Ohio, and they're looking at 4,000 rides a year or a season. Is that enough? Is 10 inspectors enough to inspect that many rides, keep them safe?
Well, that's a great question, Mike, and I think it's probably a question in Ohio that they are taking up right now. Historically, Ohio has been one of the leaders in the country in terms of bringing inspectors, government inspectors, to the portable industry, fairs, and elsewhere. And so Ohio and Pennsylvania have done really well. But I took a look at their webpage in preparing for this interview, Michael, and things have changed since this was first developed, and I would suspect they will take a look at the level of inspection that they apply to the rides going forward.
You say things have changed. Are their duties have expanded? There are more rides they're responsible for now?
No. No, I'm not saying that. It's just that the entire industry has grown and become extremely cautious and much more careful with when it comes to safety of amusement rides. When the Ohio laws and the Pennsylvania laws were passed many years ago, we did not have the level of safety standards that we have today. Your last interviewee, Ken Martin, talked about the American Society of Testing and Materials, and I sit on the executive committee of that body, and the level of standards that we now have in the last, say, 7 years is dramatic and gigantic, and we have inspections of all sorts, from design to the manufacturing, the operation, the maintenance, and even in the accountability. We have methods for reporting incidents now. We have patron suitability assessments because of the Americans with Disabilities Act. We have clearance envelopes, failure analysis, hazard mitigation, safety-related control systems, and much of this has been, in fact, almost all of it has been within the last 10 years. So,
what prompted that change that you speak of? Were there accidents 10 years ago that woke the industry up? Was it the desire to make these rides even more thrilling, to compete with the Cedar Point rides that are getting more and more thrilling every year? What prompted the stepped up attention to safety?
It wasn't one thing, Mike, that prompted it. It evolved over time. And I would suspect that in the late 90s, for lots of reasons, the internet and technological developments, there was greater ability to inspect and regulate and harness the forces that individuals can enjoy when they go on an amusement ride. And so over time, since the 90s, when I've been involved with the American Society of Testing Materials, which is now the International Society of Testing and Materials, we have passed so many standards. And there's not really one thing that has caused it, but it's been a desirable time.
Let's go to Drew Tewksbury from the McGowan Amusement Group. Drew, it seems like these rides get more and more thrilling. It's taking more and more to thrill us these days. Technology is improving, and we assume that the technology is keeping up with the safety of these rides. But is there a tipping point where this is as far as we can go to thrill people, to bring them up to that edge of excitement?
I don't know if there's necessarily a tipping point. Certainly, I don't think that we've gotten close to it if it exists. The great thing about this industry is the engineers that are behind the manufacture of these devices and the design of them are constantly putting safety at the forefront. And it is a balancing act because, you sit there and you see the rides now are really testing the limits of G-forces on the human body, and they're doing all kinds of things to create even more and more thrill out of the experience. But as Boyd said, ASTM is really ahead of the curve in making certain that the limits on the human body and the limits on the equipment themselves are within certain tolerances. And, the ASTM has just done a terrific job of that. There's always going to end up being somebody that's going to continually try and push it and evolve it further. But I think as a whole, the industry has probably done a pretty good job of policing itself when it comes to these. I mean, we've seen some things in the past where people have, and I can't cite specific examples other than, just historical discussions, but people will always try and create something new and thrilling. But the industry's done a very good job of holding off on rolling those types of devices out that really push those limits until they are tested and proven. A state like Ohio, that where the law and the inspection law and the design law and the usage law for amusements is based on ASTM So as ASTM evolves and changes, so does the law in Ohio. And that's one of the beauties of the way that it was crafted is it's meant to always be up with what's going on in the industry. So, you know, even if we get a manufacturer that really starts to push those limits and gets to close to whatever that virtual tipping point is that you allude to, I truly have faith in ASTM as a standard body, and then, you know, the Ohio law and inspections will follow to make sure that the rides are safe.
That's Drew Tewksbury. He's a vice president with McGowan Amusement Group. Also with us is Boyd Jensen. He's an attorney and also past president of the International Amusement and Leisure Defense Association. We're talking about amusement park ride safety in the wake of the tragic accident at the Ohio State Fair last week. Boyd, should there be the thing we hear is each state is different, and you mentioned that Ohio and Pennsylvania have stepped up in your opinion and have a very good inspection program. Other states maybe don't have that same level of care. Should there be a federal set of regulations to make sure that these rides, because they do travel from state to state, to make sure these rides meet a basic minimum federal standard of safety?
I've never really felt like a federal regulatory scheme would be that effective, just because of the reasons that you cited. And there's other criteria as well, Mike. California and Florida, their weather dictates how their industry develops and grows. And that's a different weather pattern than in the Midwest and in the East. And so inspecting rides that are subject to various kinds of forces, whether it's movement or they're in a static location, it doesn't meld well with a federal blanket of regulations. And furthermore, when you step back and take a look at the amusement industry, it's unique. You can't go into the grocery store and buy lots of different kinds of inner tubes to put in your pool. It's unique. They're finding different methods to move people, to thrill people in creative ways. And because of its uniqueness, there's how many university courses are there in amusement ride design and maintenance and manufacturing? Just recently, I believe Penn State has devoted a section of their engineering department towards the amusement industry, and there may be a couple of other institutions that have done it as well. But nationally, it doesn't meld well because of the individuality of this particular kind of amusement.
Okay. Drew Tewksbury from the McGowan Amusement Group. But we talk about how these rides are getting more and more sophisticated, and we talked about it earlier in this program. But the operators, especially at the traveling amusements, tend to be, you know, low-wage workers. Should there be more stringent requirements that an operator of an elaborate ride like the Fireball or some of these other really exciting thrill rides should be professional ride operators that train and maybe even have an engineering background?
Very good question, Michael. You know, fortunately, the operations of these rides, and even a ride like a Fireball, okay, which is certainly a thrilling ride, and there's a lot of different components to it. The actual operation of the rides themselves is a pretty simple process. You know, there are operating switches and levers and kill switches and buttons and all these fun things that we can go through on each ride. But the training of the operation of the rides for these individuals, and yes, you know, generally speaking, these are lower skilled and lower paid employees, but it doesn't mean that they're not in any way capable and can't do a fine job of it. It does fall upon the show owner, though, or the park owner, to have a pretty thorough training program and like an apprentice program for the operators to make sure not only are they aware of how to operate the ride, and it isn't a challenge mentally to how to operate them, but more importantly, how to be observant of what's going on in the rides and how to control the patrons and know when something isn't right and being able to be observant enough to stop a ride when you hear something that doesn't sound quite right. And those things are experience related and training related. I don't necessarily think you need an engineer in there. You need an engineer involved to help with, you know, certainly with maintenance and design, but a really well vetted training program that gives your ride operators a ton of experience, both theoretical and practical. It's going to go a long way on that one.
And someone with a lot of confidence who can tell that long line of folks waiting to get on it that, you know, I have to shut this down because something's going on here.
Well, you're absolutely right because, you know, you sit there and you think about it. You've got folks that have waited for 45 minutes or so in a queue line, and they're all eager to get on it. But you know what? The ride operators themselves have to be confident. They have to be in control, and they have to be empowered by the park or the show owners to have the authority to sit there and say, you know what, folks, something just isn't right. We've got a creek here. We're bringing in maintenance. We're bringing in supervisors to take a look at this and understand that your safety is the most important thing to us in this park or on this midway. When they have the confidence and they're empowered to say that, they do that, boy, is that effective.
Okay. That's Drew Tewksbury. He's Senior Vice President for the McGowan Amusement Group. Also, Boyd Jensen, Managing Partner of Garrett and Jensen, and past President of the International Amusement and Leisure Defense Association. Thanks to you both for joining us here on All Sides. When we come back, we'll talk about how you can keep yourself and your kids safe on rides, anything from the bounce house to the roller coaster, when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking about the safety and risks associated with amusement park rides, of course, following last week's fatal accident at the Ohio State Fair. Researchers at Nationwide Children's Hospital have studied amusement ride-related injuries to children at fixed sites like Six Flags or Cedar Point or Kings Island, and at mobile sites like the ones we see at the Ohio State Fair and perhaps your neighborhood church festival. And joining us is the manager of translational research with the Center for Injury Research and Policy at Nationwide Children's Hospital, Tracy Meehan. Tracy, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
What are the most common injuries? Of course, this was an awful, terrible injury and death that occurred last week. What are the most common injuries that you see from amusement park rides?
The good news is that most of them are relatively not too serious. So it's bumps and bruises, scrapes, some, you know, fractures, things like that. And we looked only, though, at hospital emergency departments and the data from there. So they were the more serious ones,
yeah.
And only among kids under 18. But the good news was most of them were able to be treated and sent home. Only about 1.5% were actually hospitalized. So that's good news.
So we're seeing, you know, like sprains or head and neck injuries. I'm guessing head and neck injuries, you know, the whiplash or that type of injury when, you know, these rides just take a right turn or left turn and stop quick or start quick or things like that.
Yep. Whiplash, when you bump into somebody sitting next to you, or maybe the seatbelt or if it's over shoulder bars, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. So only 1.5% required hospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
So how do these injuries occur? Is it because of the jostling of the ride? Or is it a malfunction? Is it normal operation of the ride, or is it something at the ride have to go wrong for these injuries to occur?
Most of what we saw is something that's happening while you're on the ride, not a malfunction. So it's when you fall into or on the ride, or when something bumps into you while you're on the ride, whether it's another person's head or something flying out of your pocket, something like that.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 614-292-8513. Have you been injured on a ride? even minor injuries on a ride, give us a call. We'd like to hear from you in the last 10 minutes of this hour, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's look at the different rides. We have the rides at Cedar Point and at Kings Island, Six Flags, that are there all the time, year round, maintained every single day, inspected every single day. Then we have the traveling rides. What differences do you see in the injuries there?
You know, our study, we didn't really look at it quite like that, so it's hard to say. And one thing that's really important that I've heard some of the other speakers talk about today is we don't have a good way of tracking these injuries. There's not one national database. So the injuries we looked at were only ones that went to hospital emergency departments and only kids. Mm-hmm. But even that, it's hard to get a clear picture. Every state is different. Even sometimes every locality is different. So it's really hard to tell. So I would second what some of the others were saying and really encourage us to have a national system where we're looking at a minimum the injuries. Because what that will allow us to do is track, is an injury happening on a certain kind of ride? Or is it more fixed sites versus mobile? We really don't have a clear picture right now, so it's really hard to tell.
What would it take to do that? I think Ken Martin from the safety analyst and consultant mentioned some kind of like an OSHA type of database. Is that what it would take, a federal database?
A federal database would be a good way to go because it would be easier for people to access. The Consumer Product Safety Commission actually looks at the mobile rides right now, and they have some regulatory oversight for the mobile rides. The fixed rides have no oversight whatsoever unless the state puts it in. So it's a really patchwork system right now that we're seeing, and we'd really like to see one federal organization in charge of even just looking at the injuries so we can tell how this is happening, when it's happening.
So the little, like, you know, the teacup thing at the church fair, that has some kind of oversight. But this roller coaster at an amusement park where you're hanging out on the edge of a bar, flipping around upside down, there's no real oversight for those.
Not any federal oversight.
Wow.
Some states have them, but not all.
What have you seen from how have states varied from state to state? What's the level of regulation? How does it vary from state to state?
Some have literally no regulation. Others have standards in terms of how often they're inspected, whether or not the maintenance records are required, who is required to do the inspection. And, you know, some are very good. Others have very little to none at all.
How does Ohio rank?
Ohio actually does a nice job. The Department of Agriculture really is looking into this, and they have people who are there and are trained well. So they do a nice job.
Not to pick on states, but who has the room to improve?
You know, I don't know that I have the most up-to-date data, so I'm going to step away from that one.
Okay. I just thought, you know, in case you're planning on vacationing at this state, may not have the inspections that we have, but it would be nice to know.
Right.
I assume that, you know, I rode a roller coaster at Kings Island years ago, and, you know, I had a little twinge in my neck after I was over. Nothing major, but it hurt for a day. I assume a lot of these injuries just don't get reported.
Absolutely. We don't think very many get reported at all. And if they get reported even to the amusement park themselves, they are not required to report. So the numbers that we see are just the tip of the iceberg in what's really happening.
Obviously, if you go to the hospital, it's the more serious. Even if it doesn't require admission into the hospital, it's something that's, you know, more than just a, you know, a bump or a strained neck.
Right. And even with that, we saw almost 4,400 injuries a year. And that's just to kids under 18. So it happens pretty frequently. And during the summer months, it doubles. So the injuries are happening, you know, 20 a day during the summer months.
We're speaking with Tracy Meehan. She's the manager of translational research with the Center for Injury Research and Policy at Nationwide Children's Hospital. We're talking about amusement park ride safety, of course, in the wake of last week's tragic fatal accident at the Ohio State Fair. If you looked at what causes these accidents, is it a design flaw versus operator error versus the kid being too small to be on this ride? Did you look at what the root cause of the injury was?
You know, it's really difficult for us to tell. The only data that we have is what the patients report when they're talking to the doctors or nurses, because we have to look at hospital emergency department data. Yeah. So unfortunately, we can't really tell that right now, which is why this national system would be great, because we would have a way to standardize what type of information is getting collected, where they were, and what how it was happening. We don't know that right now.
Mm-hmm. From your data, did any particular type of ride cause more injuries, like a swinging ride versus like a rail ride, like a roller coaster or a pendulum ride or anything like that, or a swirling ride?
So again, I would love to be able to tell you that, but a lot of times when they come in, they just say we were at the amusement park and we got hurt on a ride, and that's as much as we get.
Wow. Okay. So some of it would help if doctors were trained maybe to, or nurses at the ER to say, okay, what was the ride? Was it, you know, classify the ride? What kind of ride was it?
That, you know, that would help if we were able to get more information. But the doctors and the nurses are trying to treat them at the time. So this national system would help us to be able to get that and not put it all on the doctors and nurses.
Okay. We asked for folks to share their experiences on rides, and let's go to the phones. Patty from Dublin, you're on the air. Go ahead, Patty.
Good morning. I have a tale. It would be of the demented amusement park operator, and it was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The year would have been about 94. I was standing on the side of the ride with a baby, and my husband, an older daughter, she was about 7 at the time, were on the ride, and it was the round one that spins, and then the floor drops out from under you. And the man wouldn't stop the ride. They were on it for, like 20, 25 minutes, and my daughter was crying, and my husband wanted it stopped, and other people on the ride wanted it stopped. I asked the man to stop it. And he just let out this weird laugh and wouldn't. And I had to go find a cop and bring the cop over and have the cop have the man stop the ride. And I spoke with some park people about it. No one seemed to care. But there ought to be a place to report such a person, because he had no business operating such a ride.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if anything can be done with that, but yeah, there's some demented carnies is what I title it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Patty. I'm glad everything worked out. Too thrilling, I assume, for that ride, but thank you for the call. Getting to the what steps can we take to keep ourselves safe, to keep our kids safe? What's the bottom line rule if you're going out to the state fair today, or if you're going up to Cedar Point or Kings Island? What's the bottom line advice you tell parents and folks who want to ride these rides?
There's a couple things you can do. First, you want to make sure that you are following all the directions. The instructions are posted there for a reason. And if it says don't ride if you're under 14, don't let your child ride if they're under 14. Make sure you're using all the safety equipment. Make sure the safety belt is buckled or the shoulder straps come over and are locked. If it's not, ask them to stop the ride. Seating orders. Sometimes they say, you know, put the older person in or the adult in first and then the child. All of that is put in place for a reason, and it's for your safety. So make sure you're following that. The other thing you can do is take a look at the ride before you go on it. And if anything looks off, if you're not comfortable with the way the operator is running the ride, choose another activity. It's better to be safe.
That's hard to do if you've been waiting in line for a half hour. And especially if you're a parent and you've got kids with you, you've been waiting for a half hour. I mean, it's hard. That's hard to do. It can be hard to do.
It can. And unfortunately, it's a choice we need to make. But some of the things you can do as well, you asked about, is there a place where parents can go to find out about the regulations? There's an organization called saferparks.gov. They have some of the information about what the regulations are in different states, and they stay more on top of that. So that would be a good place to go if you're not in Ohio.
Mall rides. I've read we should avoid mall rides, like the ones at the shopping. Like, I've always thought those little hobby horses at the grocery stores were incredibly dangerous if a little kid gets on there and gets thrown off.
Not all of them are terrible, but a lot of them are over the hard concrete floor. Yeah. So if you think about it, if your child falls off, kids have heavy heads, so they're going to fall head first onto a hard concrete floor, which is not something you want. As long as it's over one of the foam padded surfaces, you're a little better in that situation. But pay attention to who's there, if it's one of the playground areas, if there's lots of older kids running around and you have a smaller one, maybe wait till a different day. There's some things you can do.
And if you're at the mall, don't let your big kid play with the little kids on the – they don't have bacon and eggs now at the Tuttle Mall. They used to, I think. I don't know what the new one is. But keep the big kids off the little kids in those mall amusement areas.
Yes, my son fell off the cereal bowl many times.
Well, thank you very much, Tracy Meehan from the Nationwide Children's Hospital Center for Injury Research and Policy. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson on 89.7 NPR News.